here, and at night it really grows. You get into the thousands. So you do get the sense that around the country the protests are putting pressure on the government. But again, it's really going to be this Saturday where they're going to march and how big the march will be, Nick.
Right. And if it is as big as people hope, to what degree is it felt that people power can be a force for change in Israel?
Well, people are certainly wondering if the prime minister can outlast them. You hear that a lot. People are wondering if there really will be changes made. And people recognize that if there are money given to social programs like education, if there are money given to lower food prices, if there's money given to lower all of these economic programs that people really want on the ground, that money has to come from somewhere, as you saw in Paul's package. Maybe it's the West Bank, but maybe it's out of something here domestically. Maybe it's out of Israeli society. So people do understand that they're up against the law when it comes to the government on this, and they also really recognize that there's a downturn around the world. And you hear that when you talk to people here. They understand that around the world people are struggling, and it's really the middle class. The difference in Israel, and I think what people hope to accomplish here in Israel, is the difference between the upper class and the very, very low class. People are either very rich here or they're very poor. And the teachers, the people that work in unions, the people that are in the food industry, the middle class, they're really disappearing, Nick.
Carl, thanks very much. That's the latest there from Tel Aviv in Israel. Carl Perry. There is a rise in attacks on medical workers and healthcare facilities in war zones. That's according to a report by the International Committee of the Red Cross. It looks at incidents in 16 countries, including how in Bahrain in February, the military took over Zamaniyah Hospital when it was suspected medical staff were supporting protests. Almost 50 doctors and nurses were detained. In Afghanistan last April, Taliban fighters used an ambulance packed with explosives to target a police training base. 12 people were killed. And in Somalia, 22 medics, including trainee doctors, were killed back in 2009 when a suicide bomber blew himself up. The ICRC says the attacks violate international humanitarian law. Now, after the bust comes the boom. That's at least true for real estate agents in the United States state of Florida right now. Homes left deserted after the housing market crash are selling again. And as Barbara Benitez reports, Brazilians are doing much of the buying.
Miami's pristine shores have been drawing in tourists from Latin America for decades. But these days, beaches aren't the only draw. In the aftermath of America's housing crash, the low cost of homes here has proven irresistible to international buyers, and that is helping to energize this once sagging market.
We're enjoying a renaissance right now. After the bust, we have basically used up all this overbuilt inventory that was the center of the news. And the way we're doing that is marketing to people offshore who have found the value here in Miami to be extraordinary.
Leading the wave of offshore buyers are Brazilians. Cristiano Piquet was a race car driver in Brazil. Now he's in real estate, and he's cashing in on Miami's troubled market.
The crisis only helped us because when the prices went down, that's when the Brazilians really start buying. And I was in the right place at the right time.
He says Brazilians are buying in Miami for the value that they can't find back at home.
The properties here today are half of the price than the properties in Brazil. So it's a really good deal for the Brazilians.
This is a pretty big master bedroom.
Piquet has teamed up with real estate developer Michael Deezer to help fill vacancies left by the housing bust.
We're showing that Brazil is a stronger and stronger market, and now it's a market that we're really relying upon.
Brazil's economy grew by more than 4% last year and continues to expand. This, coupled with its surging real estate prices and a strong currency, are key reasons why many Brazilians are seeking a deal abroad. And Miami is the place of choice. And this, in turn, is helping to bolster South Florida's housing market, which is experiencing an international buying frenzy that agents say is causing the supply to dwindle.
By sometime next year, we're going to be out of that inventory. And what happens when we get to that point? New construction begins. So we're all very excited about watching things return to some sense of normalcy here in South Florida.
But while the sun may be shining on South Florida's market, in less desirable U.S. cities where there's no international demand, it may be a long time before the dark clouds break. Barbara Benitez, Al Jazeera, Miami, Florida.
We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Al Jazeera English on the Radio, broadcast exclusively by the Pacifica Radio Network, Free Speech Radio.
And the time is just about 7 o'clock p.m. You're listening to WBAI New York. It's time for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
Telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Right, it is camping season here at Off the Hook, and we have a bunch of campers. But first, let me tell you who's in the studio with me today. This is Rob T. Firefly, by the way, here with you, and I'm joined by Voltaire.
Not camping.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Lexicon is here.
Hello.
And Jim is here.
Hi.
And who have we got on the line?
Do we have them on the line?
Yes, we can.
Oh boy, we've got so many people here. Let's Bicycle Mark over there.
Hello,
Bernie S.
In Eastern Germany.
Johannes from Austria.
Grüß Gott.
Bobson from Bulgaria.
Good evening from Northern Germany.
Wow, you always call up either off the wall or off the hook, and now you're here live in the studio in Germany.
Yes, that's indeed. Cool.
And that looks like Kyle all the way over there.
Hi, everybody.
All right. I forgot your name.
Attila.
Attila. How can I forget that name? Attila.
Yeah, I don't know.
From where?
Netherlands.
From the Netherlands. Attila from the Netherlands. And, wow. We've got Junes. Do you have a microphone, Junes?
I'll borrow this one.
Okay.
I'm not in a car this week.
I can't see who you're borrowing it from, unfortunately. Oh, there's Mike. Okay.
Hello.
How you doing, Mike? Greg Newby.
Hey, what's up?
Mitch Altman.
Hello.
Me again, and Red Hack here.
Hello.
Does that mic work? You have a clip-on mic or some sort.
Hello.
You're not borrowing mine. That's not fair. Okay, so we're all here, and there's more people coming supposedly. We're actually broadcasting to the camp right now. Are people listening in the camp? Can we have the entire camp give a big cheer at once? Is that possible, do you think?
Do a countdown.
Can someone open the door and see if anybody... And I mean, just, you know... Shout as loud as you possibly can. Someone is killing you. When we count down to 3, 2, 1, just, you know, mayhem, bloody murder. Like, you're going to get some kind of $1 million prize for shouting. Do we have a microphone?
There are riots already.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Well, that was a letdown.
I don't think anybody's listening on the cam.
It's a really all-out party now.
Yeah.
It's a really busy night.
Thousands of people from around the world out here.
Yeah. All right, people need to tune to 98.6.
That's 92.6.
I'm sorry, 92.6. Why do I keep getting that right?
That's not for listeners in New York.
No, just here.
Obviously not. Yeah, you'll get a staticky signal if you try that in New York. But here in the camp, we have a signal. How powerful, Nakun, I should introduce you to. You're the actual board operator here.
Yeah.
You've been
on
the radio in New York as well when you're traveling through. So tell us something about this radio station that you have running here.
Oh, well, I can talk for hours. What do you want to know?
Oh, we only have 1 hour.
I'll try to be brief. We've got a transmitter on the FM, you mentioned, 92.6. And, we've got an internet stream going. We've got about 12 mics, which are more than all in use. And, we've got lots of gear and blinking lights to make it all sound good.
How powerful is the station?
I think we're doing 12 watts forward in reflection. I've started about 8 watts now, I think. We started at 9, but somehow it's dropping, so we need to tune things.
Well, somehow it's dropping?
It's electronics. It's alive.
Uh-huh. Back in New York, is there anything you guys want to ask us before we start? We have all kinds of things to tell you about, but are there any specific questions we'd like to address them right away?
Where are you guys?
Oh, where are we? That's a good question. Kyle, where are we? Do you have any idea?
Yes, we're in Fino, or Fino Fert, in the, what region would you describe this here in Germany?
Brandenburg.
Brandenburg.
Wait, who said that with the rolling R?
Of course me.
Who else?
Say it again.
WBAI, New York. 99. WBAI, New York. 99.5 FM.
Anyway, so we are here on this camp. This is the second time this camp has taken place, and on this particular area, and does somebody want to describe the basic scenery as to what you see when you're walking around?
It's kind of a dump, actually. Literally speaking, there's a bunch of old military equipment that's been left here to be looked at and to gradually fall into oblivion.
Now, when you say dump of military equipment, you don't mean like they left their artillery behind.
A depot. There's simulated artillery. I don't know if anyone's seen that. There's actually missiles, like cardboard missiles, in some of the back rooms around here. They look kind of cool.
Well, I saw a truck-mounted missile, which didn't look like cardboard to me.
It's real, and some of it is sort of simulated. It's from various periods, but it's uglier than crap.
But I think what's kind of neat is that people here have actually made it look nicer.
They've put
lights on it. They've projected things on various old pieces of airplane and helicopter machinery, and it looks nice, even though yes.
And there's even gorilla knitting.
What happened to the voice, Mitch?
Oh, I've been shopping all day. It's only
such a smooth voice. It sounds
like my voice.
What happened? You've been talking a lot, getting a lot of instructions on how to build things.
The usual hardware hacking, except this time it's the hardware hacking tent. It's the biggest tent.
Mitch,
this is
the first day of a 5-day event. What are you going to be like in the next 4 days?
Well, someone should probably get a mop and sweep me up.
Uh huh.
So besides being an airport, a former Soviet airport, this site is actually run as sort of a museum, and they're kind enough to allow an event like this to take place. And the lighting and the old aircraft and things that sort of look like junk at first glance, they're actually part of what I guess is their collection, and they do a bit to display them and show it off. And I think the art event people here, as Red Hacks was indicating, have done a great job illuminating it, and it just really adds the ambiance. Well, and here we are on the first full day, and things are really in swing, and people are actually really starting to enjoy themselves. I think we had a day of talks, and people are settled in, and I think people are sort of not arriving so much as enjoying themselves.
And the weather's great.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Those of us who didn't bring jackets with us might argue, because all of a sudden it's in the 50s and 60s, and I wasn't expecting that, because I came from Vegas and then New York, both of which are pretty hot, and I was expecting Germany to be the same, but it wasn't.
I'm loving the weather right now.
You're from Bulgaria, so you're a lot hotter there than it is here.
Yeah, on Monday in Sofia it was 33 Celsius, which is in the mid-90s Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it was not...
I wasn't happy with it, and on Tuesday when we landed on Tegel, they told us it's 16 Celsius outside, and I was so happy with still being on the plane with the weather. I was, and I'm enjoying the weather. It got a bit cold last night, and I didn't have the clothes that I bought today.
And there's some drizzle, it rains a little bit, but that's part of the experience, and we're all having a great time.
It's a drizzle, it's not raining.
So the Chaos Communication Camp is something that takes place every 4 years in Germany, and on the alternate every 4 years, there's a camp that takes place in Holland. But this particular one, this is the fourth one? The first one was in 1999, so this will be the fourth one. And I think we have a total of 3,500 people here. It's sold out, so they stopped selling tickets to it and limited it to 3,500 people. And what we see right now, just there's lights everywhere, displays, music, food of all sorts being served in various tents and villages. What are some of the villages that that we have here?
You know? Nationalities, a lot of nationalities. There's French, Italian, German, of course, Dutch, Finnish. Yeah, a lot of nationality villages. And then some hobby villages. So I saw an RFID tent, for example.
And there's an American village, too. In fact, Nick Troy just ducked his head in here a moment. I don't know if he's going to come back in. But if he does, he can describe that whole hackers on a plane thing that got hackers from America over here. And I think they even flew a plane, a prop plane, over to the airport. This is part of it. This is an airport. This used to be a Soviet-run airport, and they still have a runway.
Mitch was on that plane.
Mitch,
you can describe it.
You were on the plane. Tell us what that was like.
It was a 1968 Soviet aircraft that was decommissioned.
An Antonov A-2, I believe.
Yeah, and the person who bought it when the wall came down, and he's been flying it ever since. It used to be a training thing for people jumping out with parachutes.
It's a biplane.
Yeah.
He's been maintaining it ever since, too. Not just
important.
That's an important part.
Yeah, and he's really good at it. And while he was flying us back, he messed around with us a little bit. But it was a lot of fun. That thing just floats. It's an amazing vehicle.
And it's not bumpy at all?
Well, I wouldn't say that. It was very bumpy. I've been motion sick twice in my life, and on the way back on the plane was the second time.
It's been very windy, though.
It has been.
And we shouldn't forget, because we haven't mentioned that yet, there's a general theme for the camp, and the theme is space. So today there was the big keynote by Jens and Nick, and they were talking about... Lars, Jens, and Nick. Yes, yeah, of course, yeah. And they were talking about their vision, their utopia of an upcoming hacker space program. Maybe some of you wanted to talk about that a bit.
What would a hacker space program be like exactly? Oh, here's the man himself. That car just walked in.
It would have great lighting, for sure. Yeah, maybe we can get Nick to articulate the three themes of the space program proposal. And I think while he's finding a microphone, the essence of this is that 4 years ago there was a challenge to do hacker spaces. That was successful, so the next challenge is to put us into space, and we have a little time to do that. Do you want to work through the three steps, Nick?
Sure. Okay, that mic's not on, I don't think. Is it? It's like a lounge singer. wireless mic, yeah, expecting to break out this song.
I'm leaning over the desk right now. Just to clarify, it's not it's not me putting people in space. It's hackers putting themselves in space and collaborating and getting together and developing the technologies and trying things that governments and corporations may not have fully explored because they didn't meet their aims. I think that applying the hacker ethic and applying all the wonderful knowledge and experience and passion that you see in hackerspaces, it's absolutely possible that we can put a satellite-based, as uncensorable as possible, internet up by the next camp in 4 years. And that's the first phase. Phase one is building a satellite-based internet network that's totally open and free and accessible to anybody, you know, with a cloth satellite dish. And that, and especially as we've seen governments cut off the internet in Egypt and Syria and the long-time censorship in China and a lot of the scary laws that they're passing, you know, here in Germany and to a lesser extent in the United States, we can see the terrestrial-based internets are very, very censorable.
We've seen CubeSats and such go up already as hobby projects and school projects, so it's very possible to get a essentially hacker-based satellite into the sky.
Hacker-based satellite. We're really at that stage in human development. That's amazing. I'm thrilled.
And, I mean, Bernie should talk about that because there is a history that we can tap into with ham radio, I think, or isn't it?
Yeah, I pointed out at Nick's talk earlier today, yesterday.
Today?
Today.
It's like a time warp. The ham radio community for literally the past three decades or so have launched several amateur satellites, voice and data satellites, without having to pay any money for a launch vehicle, just by using their contacts with government and commercial satellite launchers to use their satellites, which are smaller, amateur satellites, which are smaller, as ballast weight, which is necessary. You can use dead weight or you can use a nonprofit satellite. I'm hoping that the hacker community can coordinate with the at least like cross over with the amateur radio community and learn from what they have in getting several of their satellites into space. It's, I think Nick's idea, it's a challenge, like a JFK kind of challenge. We will be in space by a certain year. It's a good one. And I think there's a lot that the hacker community can learn from the amateur radio community in succeeding in that one.
There are three points to the story, I think. So I want to make sure we hear the other two.
Yeah, no, the two other phases, at least as I see it happening. And that's an important distinction, is that I see this not as me saying, oh, we should do this, but I see this as something that's already in progress in hacker spaces. And I think that by just using this camp, focusing on the theme of Project Flow Control and collaborating and talking about it and actually believing it to be possible, it will happen, and it will happen of its own. It will happen in ways that are wonderful and unimaginable, just like the hackerspaces movement 4 years after the last CCC camp is wonderful and expansive and incredible in ways we couldn't have even imagined. You know, my only goal was showing people hackerspaces and letting go from there, and it took off in an incredible way. And I think the exact same thing is happening to the space program. The second phase that I proposed in the keynote this morning was putting a hacker in orbit. I think it's absolutely possible once we develop the technologies to put payloads into orbit, such as satellites, it's just a little bit more technology to put an actual hacker into orbit. And I think the important thing there to realize is that in the history of space exploration as humans, so much of putting a first person in orbit was based around nationalistic and quasi-militaristic goals. And I think the beauty of putting a hacker into space is that it would be the finest, most brilliant, most intelligent people representing humanity as a whole in achieving a goal like this outside of the realm of a government or a militaristic aim.
Yes, but hackers love to tinker with things. And do you really want a hacker going up into space and saying, what does this button do? And, you know, I mean, yeah, I'd like to know what the button does, too. But are hackers the best people?
Well, I think we can hope the hacker we send out would like to be coming back, and that's something also we need to work at, because that's the best bet we can have. Because if we send someone out who's not looking into coming back, that might be a problem.
Now, I just wanted to ask Nick, you were at the CCC camp 4 years ago, and I'd like you to basically try to remember that and compare it to, it was on the same exact place. It's the first time that's ever happened, where the camp has been on the same grounds. Do you see any noticeable difference?
Kind of a yes and no sort of question.
Is this, okay, fair enough. Yes, I do notice a difference in that we, as a community, have made an incredible amount of progress over the past 4 years. I mean, just look at the, you know, our neighbors, the Hartent across the way, and that's an incredibly beautiful installation. I'm inspired by the installation that was at Hart 2 years ago. But at the same time, I see a lot of the passion, the creativity, the excitement of camp is just the same as it was 4 years ago, only there's a little bit more of it because we have a few more people here. You know, I did Hackers on a Plane 4 years ago, and I did Hackers on a Plane here, and now I'm familiar with the territory. I've been to Europe a little bit more, and it's, well, there are still occasional logistical things. I think everything's just getting better, but all of the good parts remain the same.
Tell us about the Hackers on a Plane, the basic theory behind all that.
The basic theory behind it was encouraging actual face-to-face communication and interaction between hackers all around the world. And I think a lot of the things that we think we can accomplish in IRC or that we think we can accomplish in you know, chats or internet things just can't replace actual face-to-face communication. The goal of Hackers on a Plane was to get hackers from all over the world talking to each other and meeting with each other, going to each other's spaces and physically working on and enjoying projects and collaborating in ways that wouldn't be possible outside of a real face-to-face interaction, and also to experience other cultures and to look and see how hackers do things, you know, in other countries, in other ways, in other cultures, and bring all the best of that back home with you. And at the same time, travel with a group, because traveling in a group of hackers is, I think, much more fun and a much more rewarding experience than traveling on your own.
Hey, Nick.
All right. Now, those of us who listen to the show, actually, Bernie, maybe you know this. It was a CCC camp not maybe 4 years or 8 years ago we were talking for a good 20, 25 minutes without realizing that we were actually off the air and interviewing people all over the place. Was that 4 years ago or 8 years ago?
I think it was eight years ago. Yeah, we were a conference called in. We had multiple extensions on the decked cordless phone system, I think, there at that conference. Maybe it was mobile phones. But in any case, the lead connection in that conference, they hung up their phone, and we didn't realize we were off the air for like the better part of half an hour.
Now, do you think that might be happening now? What we're talking?
No, and this is a much better situation. We have a fantastic studio here. From what's the name of the radio station here?
That's a Binary Voice.
The Binary Voice radio station.
And
here.
You can listen to it. How do you listen to it? Those of us who want to listen after the show is over, you can still listen to Binary Voice.
Yeah, we are broadcasting through the Signal Hackerspace radio infrastructure. So you go to signal.hackerspaces.org, and it explains itself there.
Is there a URL we could give our listeners on the air?
We just did.
Hackerspace.org.
But where would they find the streaming audio though?
Oh, it's a subdomain. Signal.hackerspaces.org.
Excellent.
All right, now Nick, so let's
we have like 12 microphones around the table here.
Let's just verify that we are still on the air. So now, New York City, are you there?
You may be all right down there. I don't know what I'm doing up here, so we might have been off the air for.
At least you and I are talking, and then a bunch of in the room here are talking.
Yes, Voltaire.
That's pretty cool.
Is there? Yeah. So what's the third proposal for the Hackers in Space?
Oh, yes, I never finished that. So yeah. After putting a hacker in orbit, which would be the second phase, third phase is hacker on the moon. And
Hang on, is it raining on us right now?
That static sound is rain.
Can we just be quiet for a second? I want people to hear this. I don't know if you can hear over the phone. Did you guys hear that? Are you guys able to hear that in New York?
We're in a tent, people. We're in a tent with 12 microphones under a nice tent.
It's really loud.
A light rain way better than burning mad, like alkaloid rain dust. So I'm really fine with the rain and greenness and grass, please.
Well, Nick, we're sorry to interrupt, but it's really nature's fault.
All right. Go ahead. I think the only thing I had to add to that was I firmly believe that we can put a hacker on the moon in the next 23 years.
Well, I sure hope so. And a lot of people I know want to put hackers on the moon a lot sooner than that. But we're just going to have to wait and be patient.
Certain hackers.
Uh-huh.
So there's one thing we should mention is people in New York and around the world might be listening to this broadcast, or they might catch it on the internet later, and it's not too late to contribute ideas to this space plan. There's a wiki and a whole bunch of subset topics that people can contribute their expertise to.
Yes, that right.
I already have a contribution for a possible fourth stage. Hacker space on the moon.
Oh,
the
have you
next
thought of
half
that, Nick?
Of the century. I don't know.
What would you call it?
Years,
it's got to be a clever name.
It's going to need a stamp.
It's going to need a stamp, definitely.
International Hacker Space Station.
On the moon.
Hacker space.
Passports now, these diplomatic space passports, I guess, to get us in and out of the transfer station and through the HSA, that's the Hacker Security Association security system.
You'll still have to go through the metal detectors.
Mitch Altman put together these great hackerspace passports. Mitch, can you talk a little about these diplomatic passports I've been seeing around the conference?
Yeah, I made 2,600 diplomatic passports, hackerspace passports. They are patterned after the United States passport, but instead of welcoming people at your border with fingerprints and a photograph, it actually encourages people to cross borders. So it's not that you need one of these to go to a hackerspace, but just to encourage people to travel around and visit hackerspaces as much as they can, and if every hackerspace has their own stamp, then people can show off all the stamps in their hackerspace passport. Like, I've only been here a couple days where people have been stamping my passport, and it's already got two pages full.
Yeah. And not unlike when you travel abroad to certain countries, I already had a hard time from the guy running the stamp at the Austrian tent.
And where can you get your own?
He took a moment before he stamped my passport and asked me why I went to other hacker spaces and what I was doing there.
Wow. What else have we seen at the camp?
I think Kyle has a great overview of he got here several days ago, didn't you, Kyle? And
you saw
the infrastructure of this amazing camp being built from the ground up?
Yes, I arrived on Friday because I wanted to volunteer with the build-up specifically. I did that at HAR, which is my first European camp, hacker camp, And so I arrived. I found a camping area in the forest near the Angels. And if you haven't already guessed, that Angels are the volunteers at these kinds of events. It happens at Congress as well as the camp. And so we camp together, and we're responsible for making everyone's time awesome and for making everything here work. And we basically are the go-to people to make it all appear the way it does now.
There are things that you would not believe that Angels have to do. And it's not just setting up AV and setting up networks and things like that. What are some of the tasks that you've had to undertake in the last few days?
Yeah, so I got here, and there were tents and some basic lights and all of the data closets, which I'll get to in a minute. And most of the facilities were here. There was a large shower that got brought in afterwards, and just basic stuff like that. All the stuff that you really need to make something like this sanitary, safe, and healthy. When I got here, most of the infrastructure was in for the network, but not all of it. And they needed a lot of help digging, because they had rigged up a trench digging device that was basically being dragged behind a car, as far as I know, or something like that. I don't know. Maybe Attila, you can speak a little bit more about that. But it broke, and so we had to shovel. And so I did a lot of ditch digging.
Digging ditches for a hacker conference. People don't think that that's a part of the hacker conference, digging ditches.
Yeah, but it's very important, because the infrastructure here is pretty substantial. And so there's a lot of optics and really sensitive stuff that's buried underground. And it's best if it's buried, because a lot of people are partying and having fun, and they don't have to think about it. The network's just there, and it works quite well.
Attila, do you have anything to add to how the network was built?
Well, I can't tell anything about the digging thing. I wasn't here then. I let Angels do the work for me. Well, I can answer any specific questions you have. Explaining the network in 5 minutes is
absolutely. So, what is the uplink? How are we getting connectivity to the internet? How many data closets are there?
We have two fiber.
What do the data closets look like?
We have 2 gigabits up to the rest of the world, and the data enclosed, so they call them. We have 30, but 3 were used before we can put locks on them.
explain what the data enclosed are.
Yes, please.
Okay, you have the mobile toilets they use for building and such, and we order them empty with no cleaning stuff in them. And, well, we put the switches and stuff in there so they are dry and we can protect the fibers and all.
And for the Americans in the audience, that's porta-potties.
Okay. So.
And you're saying they actually got used before you got a chance to...
Yeah.
Okay, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Wow. So now the network is up now, and it's running smoothly and no major problems?
We had a big outage about an hour ago, but that seems to be fixed. So luckily just before the radio transmission.
Yeah, that would have affected it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Probably. Wow. Okay.
You're not safe. You're not safe yet. I mean, the power tends to cut as well sometimes.
Uh-huh. It's all about we're building a city here, and it's an incredible thing that there was just a campground, and then you guys came in with generators and the wire and the ditch equipment and all that, and there's a city built here. There are places selling all kinds of goods, all kinds of food and things like that, and there's people from all over the world sharing information and just sort of hanging out and playing music, and all that happened just in a week.
We're building an ISP grade network in 4 or 5 days, and mm-hmm. Yeah,
thousands of people in tents.
Yeah, really, it's on. Has there been much media attention?
I don't know. The network specific, or
well, as you walk around, I notice that you have a lot of tents, you have a lot of vehicles, you know, sort of camper vehicles, and you see power everywhere, and you see internet cables running into the vehicles, and of course there's ubiquitous wireless as well. So how many megawatts of power do you have on the camp right now?
I have no idea. I'm not from the power team. So.
Quite a few. So it's quite a sight to behold. You know, people used to dream of having internet to their home, and now of course you have it to your camp here in Germany.
I mean, I wanted to know how we're connected to New York.
You know, I'm damned if I know. Who set this up, and how are we actually talking to the people?
It looks like
we think we're talking to.
Well, actually, it's a bit. We're using Skype, to go to New York, and that got into our main mixing desk, to which also the microphones, all 12, 40 now go. And then all got mixed together and sent back to New York.
And that's you saying Skype out. It's not Skype to Skype.
No, we're doing Skype to a landline here.
Right. So we're calling into an actual telephone line in the WBA studios.
Indeed, yeah. But I think it only becomes actual telephone line very close to the studios.
Right, exactly.
How do we sound in New York, guys?
You sound all right.
Do we sound like we're just a regular phone call? Do we sound a little bit better than, say, Bernie S. does when he calls in every week?
I think you sound a little bit better than Bernie S. from Philadelphia on his cell phone.
How do you feel about that, Bernie S., live in the studio?
I'm glad it sounds better than that.
Bernie, I can lend you a cell phone if you want to go stand.
I don't want to subject your listeners to too much of that.
Speaking of standing outside, now the rain has abated a bit. We were thinking of sending somebody out to sort of randomly talk to some people. And since we have a wireless microphone that we've been testing, Kyla, are you up for this? Nick, you're raising your hand. You want to go out and do this too?
I volunteer.
Okay.
All right.
Maybe the two of you would be
Nick,
good.
You think you can come with me?
Yeah, sure. Let's do this together.
Let's do it.
You'd be a good team.
I'm down.
Walk around, you know, talk to various people, visit different communities and things like that, hopefully we'll be able to hear you.
Yeah. Are they going to be able to hear us?
What is the range on this wireless microphone in feet, roughly?
Is it the Sennheiser? Or? I'm really hoping they find a community called Moose.
We'll see.
I mean,
which microphone is it?
You have to understand, this is our first day of production here, so we finally have all the buttons where they are supposed to be. And
Kuhn, please stop apologizing. This works much better than WBAI.
It's the Behringer microphone.
You just said that over WBAI, yeah. You know.
Yeah, don't say it again. I'm in the studio.
All right.
Then we're good to go, I think. It's 150 to 200 in this condition. Yeah.
By the way, there are some people massing outside the radio station here, which is right on the main thoroughfare of the camp, and you're welcome to stand out there in the rain and watch us if you wish and wave like you're on the Today Show or something like that. It's coming down pretty good, but we're sending our reporters out there. Maybe they'll talk to you, but by all means, come by and say hi, and we'll be happy to see you. It's been great seeing people throughout the last couple of days. I got here one day before it opened. And today was the first day, and this thing goes until Sunday. And then, of course, there's teardown after that as well. So it's all really fascinating. And what are you pointing at, Bernie?
We have Dan Kaminsky here.
Dan Kaminsky, oh, my God,
hey.
Look at that. Where did he come from?
Dan
Kaminsky. Dan Kaminsky, suddenly, why don't you sit at a chair where there's a microphone? Suddenly materialized out of nowhere. There's all kinds of luminaries here, and you're certainly one of them. That chair seems to make the most noise of any chair in the room, so yes. Tell us, this is not your first camp, is it?
Oh, no, this is my second camp. I came here 4 years ago. It was quite possibly the greatest security con art event, technology event that I've ever been to. So, I just got back from Black Hat and DEF CON in Las Vegas, and it was a week in Vegas, and it's pretty hard to do. I don't think there's anything else I would have gotten on a plane for besides camp.
I went to my first DEF CON in 11 years over the past weekend. I've been flying all kinds of planes all over the place. And, wow, it just, I didn't even recognize it. 15,000 people show up to these things now in Las Vegas. I remember SummerCon where 75 people showed up. What's the smallest hacker conference you've been to?
Well, I always go to TourCon every year, and that's, a couple hundred people out in mm-hmm. San Diego, and it's run by Dave Volton, better known as Akari. And it is just always just the small, shrew, everybody hangs out with everybody. There's no distance between hackers and speakers and anything like that kind of event. But DEF CON, from my feeling, is back. It's very much a experience of lots of people, very curious, there's a lot of new blood mm-hmm. Doing interesting things. And even 10-year-olds are doing interesting things now.
Yeah, it's just, can you imagine if 10,000 or 15,000 people tried to show up here or at Hope or something like that? It kind of scares me that there's that much enthusiasm that it could unleash itself in such a way.
Well, I mean, the big deal is that we're out there now. Hacking has so far beyond anything that can be ignored now. I think we will look back in a few years and look at the PlayStation Network outage as the thing that changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even something like WikiLeaks. Yeah, that affected government. Okay, the PlayStation Network outage, it's like an entire generation getting grounded and having their toys taken away and put in a closet for a month. Like,
uh-huh.
Oh, my God. And you turn around and you look at Black Hat and DEF CON and the amount of press that was not technical press, that is not security press, that is just like, you know, and you know, random reporters on normal things are showing up like, so is this where, like, Anonymous hangs out? No. Oh, no.
There are rumors that Anonymous is here, but I don't know if it's true. There are rumors that they're everywhere.
Exactly.
You know, as I hear the sound of the rain coming down on our tent, I feel sad that Kyle and Nick Farr are out there somewhere walking around. Guys, can you hear us? No, they can't hear us.
Go find them.
Yeah, please find them and see if they're okay.
We're sending out a scout.
They might have been set upon by the
crowd. Rescue party.
Yeah. All right, so we're on that. That's cool. And
fail.
Yeah. New York, any questions from you?
I think we're doing all right. You, yes, Voltaire.
Can you tell us about the OpenLeaks panel that was at CCC?
OpenLeaks, yes. Let's see. Well, who was at OpenLeaks? Nobody? Well, I was at OpenLeaks.
I was there.
Gents, you were there with me. And we saw the head of OpenLeaks, Daniel, last night. I always forget his last name. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Eskimo, can we introduce you?
You did.
I did. Okay, you haven't said much, so I forgot if we introduced you.
I threw in a few one-liners.
Okay. So what are you pointing at?
But back to the OpenLeaks panel, which I was busy preparing my thing. So, but Junes was there. So.
Uh-huh. Well, Bernie, you keep pointing at something. I don't know what you're pointing at.
Daniel, what was Daniel's last name?
Daniel Domscheitberg.
Yeah. No, say who said that. Say that again.
Domscheitberg.
The whole thing, the whole name.
Daniel Domscheitberg.
That's how name should be said. Why can't we do that? Why can't we say names like that? Thank you.
Only an Austrian can say it like that.
Yes.
But Daniel gave a compelling talk about alternatives to WikiLeaks.
He was good. I mean, he didn't even use the W word until maybe 40 minutes into the talk. Basically, he responded to a lot of challenging questions, including one from Jacob Applebaum from WikiLeaks, and basically, I think stood up to the crowd very well and won their respect. There are some very good questions, though, considering he's not using open source software. And
it's not that he wasn't using open source software. It's just that the service they have, I think, is not free and open. So I mean, probably in there using open source stuff to set it up, but basically they're not. Junes is waving his hand.
Well, the other part of it is that they're still working. I mean, they're not very far ahead in what they're trying to do, and you know, it takes time and manpower.
But, but essentially, what he was talking about was that they were partnering with different, you know, press organizations and different groups to essentially, they're not going to be like WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks kind of gets the leaks and processes them and then releases them as they see fit. And instead, OpenLeaks is more supposed to be the way that you know, the trusted place where people can send their leaks, and then they'll be passed on to other groups according to whatever those groups' needs are. So it's a little different. It's not, you know, it's not a self-contained kind of organization that does all the work. They're just the drop box, if you will, but a more advanced.
But it still hasn't actually done anything yet. It's not online yet.
It's online for the camp. They've asked for the people here to work on it.
Hello? Who's talking? Is that our reverend reporters out there?
Yeah, I found them.
Oh, where are they? What happened?
So hang on. I will give Nick to you now.
Okay.
1 second.
Nick, can you hear us? Anybody, can you hear us? Kyle, are you out there?
There's like some music out here.
Well, they're obviously someplace. Can you guys hear us at all? Well, there seems to be some confusion out there.
I can't hear us, but we can't hear them very well.
It sounds like people are arguing over the price of something.
They're figuring out how to put the headphones on, I guess.
Okay, well, let's let them figure that out, and we'll get back to them. It's Bernie.
Back to the OpenLeaks talk. Daniel wanted to be on the show tonight, but this is the launch party for OpenLeaks tonight, which we attended, and he was busy negotiating some work with some hackers on development programs there. So he can be on, but he hopes to be on the show in the very near future.
Okay, so we'll definitely have a good conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit hectic tonight, so it's probably all for the best. We'd like to ask him a lot more questions about various things. But that's just one of the talks, 5 days of talks. 1 day is done, 4 days to go. Okay, are Reverend reporters out there?
We are outside right now. There's an excellent blinking lights installation happening in the rain right now, and we're actually headed over towards the Meta Lab tent. We're definitely going to find some interesting things going on there and be able to interrupt something. Ooh, looks like we've got a meeting going on.
Hey, Nick, about how far away are you from the studio tent?
I'd say we're about 45 meters away from the radio tent.
You're starting to break up a little bit, so we can hear you.
In here randomly, and I'm going to find one person here and say, excuse me, sir, could I interrupt you for a moment?
Okay. You obviously can't hear us very well. There we go. He was engulfed in the 24-hour breakfast. Okay, he's still there. He's still there. Nick, can you hear us?
Do you believe that hackers can go into space in the next 23 years?
Of course they can. People actually do. I was just showing a project called Copenhagen Suborbitals. Some guys from Denmark who did a successful launch on the 3rd of June this year, and they are actually building a rocket. They built a rocket, test flight it, and, so it's not like utopia. It's happening right now.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Wait, what about you? Do you think that a hackerspace program is possible?
Not in the next 20 years, I don't think so.
You don't think that we'll be able to land a hacker on the moon in the next 23 years?
No, I don't think so.
Hey,
Nick, I really have a really important question. Not concerning the space program, but you're at the Meta Lab, and I've heard they built a pancake machine. Can you see? Is it working?
Machine right here. It looks really interesting. What does this do? It looks like a turntable, something for construction. Does anybody know what this does?
As far as I know, it's an automatic crap robot. It makes crap.
Crap!
Actually, we prefer to say crate. We want to be really safe. All right. Yeah.
Oh. Awesome. Can you put crap in it?
Science.
Okay. Maybe you should move on to another. So you're at the Austrian space now, but there was somebody from Denmark there, I believe.
Yes, we're at the Austrian space, and they've got all kinds of people. People tend to mix it up. You know, that's the point. You have different villages, and you go to one that interests you. Maybe they have a cool project. Maybe they've got some gizmos. Right now, there's people outside in a van, and what they've been doing all night is using software and a projector to project the outline of an image of this helicopter that's in front of them. And they're putting a video image on the side of it, and it's taking the shape, and they're animating it. It's beautiful, and it goes right along with the installation. And we're going to actually pass the lecture halls now, which are all very well decorated. And of course, we have the Heart of Gold, center of it all, the CCC's iconic spaceship, which is very representative of the theme for this year's camp. And it's just amazing. Everything's lit. There's passes down the runways, and coffee stand, places you can get a snack in the middle of the rain with all of this light.
Can you see any drunk hackers? I'm very interested in drunk hackers.
Okay, well, we'll do our best to find some drunk hackers.
Yeah, please.
All right. Yeah, you guys having some reception problems. I'm not exactly sure if there's anything you could be doing differently.
The barista here. Oh, nope, no interview with the barista.
Okay, yeah, I don't know if you guys can hear, but... Yeah, if you're shaking the mic or something like that, try to avoid. So, okay, are they still with us? No, I'm hearing music. So they're somewhere where they're
hearing music.
We hear you, but try not to move the microphone too much, and maybe there won't be so much interference.
Heard out here.
Okay, that's not good at all. Maybe
too far away.
We could move that closer to the door or something. The actual no, we can't do that. All right, could you guys move a little closer to where we are? Maybe it'll get better that way.
Maybe Nick Farr is already on the moon. It sounds like.
Well, it does. It does.
Houston, we have a problem.
New York, any questions from you?
We're doing okay. So how else was DEF CON? Like, what went on there around you guys?
Well, for me, it was basically just selling the hacker calendar because I was in the vendor area. I didn't really get to walk around during sessions too much. But I did meet an awful lot of people. And, boy, I got to say, there are so many listeners to our radio show that came up and said, hey, we're fans of Off the Hook. We listen all the time. And it was just great meeting all those people. So a very special hi if you walked up to our vendor table at DEF CON last weekend. It's great to meet our listeners. Great to always see who they are and what they're into and things like that. And basically, it's an amazing combination of all kinds of ideas and knowledge and things like that. I mean, Dan, you probably saw a lot more. You probably participated a lot more in the actual sessions. Any highlights that come to mind?
You know, the biggest highlight for DEF CON for me, and in fact, like one of the big metrics I consider in terms of what makes...
Have we lost you guys?
No. They're probably still talking, too.
It sounds like we may have lost Germany. How are things here?
Warmer, unfortunately.
Do we wait for them to call back?
Hopefully they will. See if they call back.
Do we have their number, actually?
We don't have theirs. They have ours.
Well, at least they won't be talking for more than 10 minutes, because that's about all the time we'll have left in this show.
Well, if one of you guys can send them a text message, they can still receive texts. Yeah. And they might not know they're not on the air anymore. But in any case, there are a couple of things we can talk about here. We did get a couple of... I want to thank everybody over the past number of weeks who helped us out with our fundraiser.
Yes.
That's always, you know, that regularly happens, and we always get our awesome audience helping us out with it. We always get emails every week asking us after the fact if they can donate to us and get our premiums, and I'm afraid the answer is no, we can't give you premiums. They're only during the hour we're broadcasting live. But you can, if you want to still support our show and our station, you can... let me see if this is the...
We have a blinking light.
We have a... Yes.
This is the studio. Do we get you guys back?
Yeah.
Hello again. Okay. To finish up what I was saying while you were gone. You can always support our show if you go on wbai.org. There's a function there to donate to your favorite show. If you select Off the Hook as your favorite show on there, you will be supporting our show. We can't give you our premiums, but you can do that anytime, even when it's not a fundraiser. So welcome back, you guys.
All right. Yeah, well, this is something unexpected. I mean, we're just sitting around, all of a sudden, all the lights went... Why? It looks like only our tent, all the lights went out. What's up with that?
Raining!
It's raining. We have no lights. We have no phones. We have no internet. So, unfortunately, that's how it is right now. Oh, the lights came back on. All right, Red Hack has this giant flutter coming on. So, you've proven that now. So I guess what we're going to do is just finish off the show by passing the phone to various people who have something to say.
Just a phone on the wireless, not even a real phone.
What do you mean it's not a real phone? We're talking on it.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's Skype on the wireless network here.
We're talking on Skype on the wire. Well, so what? People can hear you. You can hear us, right?
We can hear you.
And your mic. All right.
This is not a conversation. It's a real conversation. I'm going to hand someone who is describing some of the highlights that I mean. Government.
Did we lose you again? There you are. Sort of.
Okay.
So what my metric for reading what makes a show is how many people...
Okay, you're breaking up terribly. We can only hear like every third word. So unless you're speaking in code, it's not very good.
Can you hear me?
No.
Okay.
All right, I have to officially say, now they sound worse than when Bernie calls from Philly.
Yeah, now we're missing Philly.
Worse than Bernie is calling. Now he's been on law. Try stand. Thing one, two, three, sounding now.
I think you might be improving a little bit.
You think?
There you go again.
Even country 99.5 is better than this.
No, don't say that.
I'm my foot, like...
So this week on Off the Phone... have we still got you?
Have them call us back.
Yeah, I think if you guys could attempt to maybe reconnect to us.
Special.
I don't think they know.
You know, later we can form all these words together and see what they're saying. There might be a hidden message in it of some sort.
Maybe if we play backwards at 1.5 speed, you know?
Through a Tesla coil.
Yes.
There we go.
And they're off the line again.
Yes, for all those listening, this is an example of, you know, international phone calls. And
this might be them again.
Ooh.
Studio. Well, we've got some awesome echoey noise going on. Yeah.
Does this work or does this not work?
This is working the same as before.
Not working at all.
As in not at all. And they've gone again. But in any case. So what else is going on here in New York?
Absolutely nothing has happened in the past month since we had our fundraiser. Yeah, we have nothing to talk about.
Absolutely nothing. There are no protests. There are no technology news.
No arrests of researchers.
Hello again. Are you back?
Yes, we're back.
Oh,
we have many
you.
Competing people trying to call you, which is a terrible idea. but I'm going to give this phone back to Dan.
We'll get this out. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can hear you well.
All right, I'll try to answer the question then. Okay, so for me, what makes the conference special is not necessarily what's going on in the sessions or on the panels, and certainly not in the press. It's what happens at the bar. It's what happens at a party. It's what happens when someone walks up and says, I've got an idea, and what do you think? And it's just this genuine experience of one hacker talking to another saying, you know, this is a trick. This is something unexpected. Is it new? Is it novel? Is it going to work? And it is a moment of great vulnerability and great creativity. And I got to say, this DEF CON, more than any DEF CON in the last 4 years, I've seen just more people really exchanging ideas. The recent hacks have been, you know, in some ways problematic, but man, they've brought so many people in and they've gotten so many people who I've known for years excited again and really thinking about, wow, there's a lot more things we can do on the offensive side, on the defensive side, and just on the neutral, let's just see what technology can do side. And so from that point of view, I see this particular DEF CON as an incredible success. And, I look forward to next year.
Awesome. That is in the end what it's all about. It's the stuff that's actually at conventions and conferences is awesome, but it's the connections that outlast them that I think are the really important things.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, we tend to sometimes be a bit solitary in hackerdom, you know, just, you know, playing with our toys ourselves. And, you know, there's nothing more beautiful than seeing, like, people really connect on a way that they've never connected with each other before. One of the other things that actually surprised me, we're not necessarily normally the greatest at mentorship, you know, dealing with bringing the next generation up and introducing them to things. DEF CON this year had DEF CON Kids and just had all of these, you know, 10 to 16-year-olds showing up and just, you know, experiencing this world for the first time in their lives. And it was by and large an absolutely positive experience from every report that I've gotten. And, you know, there was actually one finding that was totally unexpected from my perspective. This one 10-year-old girl goes by the nickname of Sci-Fi, playing her online games on her mobile phone and saw, well, she was getting 10 fairies or whatever a day. I don't know which games were involved necessarily. She's like, well, I'm getting something every day. What if I just tell my phone it's next year? And she got like 3,650 Smurf Fairies. The time acceleration attack. I haven't seen time acceleration attack in years. And some people were like, is that legitimate? It's like, are you kidding? This is like the old toy you used to find a bad stuff with a phone homes, you know, something that calls home every month. Well, you just make every month, every minute, and you find the bad stuff.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's really cool seeing the kids not only experiencing, but participating.
Yeah, I know that used to be a trick ages ago with shareware, where it would only work for a certain amount of days, and if you turned your clock back to that day, it would work again. Yes, Voltaire.
I myself am guilty of doing that in Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And most of the clock attacks are always about slowing time down. Someone had the comment, oh, yeah, there are still VMS machines that are running in the 70s, because that's just as far as the license went. So we normally do slowdowns, but this was fun to see a speed up.
And from a 10-year-old, that is awesome.
I'm going to be passing the phone to somebody.
Okay.
Who am I?
Here.
All right, guys, if the clock back home is doing the same thing it's doing here, we're pretty much run out of time.
Yes, indeed.
We're sorry about the technical problems, but it's part of the whole experience. Right now, we're talking to you on a single cell phone as opposed to the full radio studio we had at the beginning of the show. And, yeah, it's a bit of a setback, but the station's going to come back on momentarily. And you can continue to listen to the fine folks at Binary Voice through signal.hackerspaces.org.